Insecurity Podcast. MVPs fight to the last. Inside and know how. We take the challenge now. Hello, and welcome to a brand new series within the Talking Security Podcast. I'm your host, Frans Oudendorp, and alongside my co-host, Puyan Gabazi, we are thrilled to introduce Security MVP Insights.
That's right, Frans. In this series, we will be diving deep into the most urgent global and also local cybersecurity challenges. We'll bring you expert perspective on the current landscape and also the future trends in cybersecurity, offering the most innovative solution and practical advice from our top security MVP professionals.
And today, we are honored to have a very special guest with us for our first episode. Please welcome Sana Diana Tomran. Sana is a well-known expert in the field, and she'll be sharing her insights on a range of topics, including the latest cybersecurity threats, collaboration in the community, and stay ahead in this ever-evolving field.
So stay tuned as we embark on this existing journey together. We believe that Security MVP Insights will be an invaluable resource for you all.
Before we dive in, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, on LinkedIn, whatever, where we're active, and to get the updates of our latest episodes. And now, let's get started with our first episode. Sana, welcome to the show. Maybe you can have a short introduction about yourself.
Thank you, guys. And also congratulations with this launch of this podcast. It's an amazing initiative, and I look forward to follow it all. So yeah, my name is Sana Diana. I am mainly working for Accenture as a consultant, where I'm staffed on different projects when it comes to Microsoft Cloud, and especially within the security domain. Local in Oslo, Norway.
Nice. So you're based in Norway, you tell me a bit about your background in the past few days, weeks. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your background, and second to that, how you became a Microsoft MVP, for example.
Yeah, sure. So my background is a bit different, I would say, at least from a lot of my coworkers and also fellow MVPs, because I actually did start out in the automobile industry, where I worked with sales, but also where you can often find me out on the floor with the mechanics and engineer, and where I like to learn a bit more of the technical side of the dealership, but also what's under the hood of the cars. And what was interesting in that time was that the automobile industry had this huge shift, where many of you might be familiar with, where it went from the typical car, as we have always known, till the electrical ones. And for me to be in the midst of that was really, really, I was so impressed to see how this was evolving and where new technology went into play and actually disrupted a really stabilized industry that have been for years back and has been grown a lot. And I was working for Mercedes-Benz, which is one of the oldest cars produced and been for ages. And also the company behind Mercedes-Benz, which was Daimler, were also an early investor in Tesla, which made us be really close to what was going on when it comes to the technology development, but also to be so close to see how it affected Mercedes as well, and the strategic and how to go to market with different cars. And also to be familiar with the electrical ones, I saw it as a computer, which sparked the interest of getting to know even more of what was behind all of this, the software and everything that was running. So I went to study, and then I started the technology study, because impressed me how much the electrical car actually did affect both the political side in Norway, because in Norway at least we had a lot of benefits from both owning, driving and selling electrical cars. So it's so fantastic to see how this shift was actually changing politics, also the economy, because a lot of the traditional sales of car in Norway at least was really challenged with the Tesla coming to market, and also to be close to see the collaboration between Daimler and Tesla in the beginning until years ahead, how they strategically partnered and utilized the big heavy engineering competencies that both sides has, but especially when it comes to the automobile side where Mercedes was so established, but also you had this startup which Mercedes was like, or Daimler was betting on, that was Tesla, but still to see the potential in the technology and how it, you could utilize it was so inspiring. And that was actually what made me take the step into technology. And from there, when I was on my second year studying information technology, I was another Dutch company knocking on my door, but that was not an automobile company. That was a software company, SAP, which is like this enterprise resource system. So it's kind of like this business system which supporting everything going on in a business operation and also supportive side. And at the time when I was there, Norsk Hydro, which is one of the world's biggest aluminum producers, got hacked. And the way they were responding was to invite all of the software vendors, which they had incorporated in their ecosystem, which was SAP, it was Microsoft, it was Sales, it was like the whole portfolio that was invited in, but also they actually did invite the broader technology community into this attack that was ongoing, and they were totally transparent because the management have chosen some decision in the early beginning. And I would like to like point out at least the three ones that I would say have been some of the pillar that's made me choosing cybersecurity, and also I would say the close collaboration with Microsoft that's done that ended up as an MVP, was that they first of all, since this was a ransomware attack, they first of all choose to not pay the ransom. Then they choose to collaborate closely with Microsoft's Dart team. And the Dart team, for the ones not familiar, it's like the one, as Pujan was mentioning, you calling like when it's really emergency.
911, please help.
Yes, yes, exactly. So they're the one to call. And the last thing that they have chosen was to be totally transparent, which made everyone that was a bit curious made that give them the opportunity to actually see what was going on. How did they handle it? How did it affect? Who were involved? How did they investigate? How did they remediate? And this opened for me, at least, being, of course, a bit closer to it than maybe people from outside, but at least it gave me this introduction to the field of cybersecurity that was amazing, because this attack on this aluminum production, they did actually put down some of the facilities. They have like 170 production facility across the world, and this malware was shutting down. So they were shutting down industrial production of aluminum around the world. And just to be introduced to that is mind-blowing, but also to see how the technology community was like mobilizing. they were really mobilizing, and people volunteered to support. People stepped in, gave their competencies. You get to know a lot of topics you wouldn't touch upon if they haven't been that transparent. And that really sparked the light for me to understand the power of the community and understand the power of knowledge sharing, and also understand how important what it is to be able to share competencies, which can affect a lot of people that are affected, whether it's by attack or whether it's to grow more in their profession, or also just to see this big and huge corporation going out there and ask for help as well, and all the support that they gave. And it was a really risky thing for them to do, because they're on the stock market, so it could have affected them hugely in a negative manner, that the prices would have dropped tremendously. But the fascinating thing was that throughout this attack, and they were totally transparencing, they were, you know, streaming, giving updates, putting out papers, updating the community, the prices actually went up. The company became more valuable due to the transparency and the engagement with the broader technology community. And this
they showed that they were resilient against that. They could fight against it much easier than the hackers expected it to be, I think, then, right?
Yeah, whether it's that or if it is the broader community stepping in, but also to show that they were prepared and was acting upon it transparently, I believe also gave trust for investors to see that these are handling it in a good manner. But of course, I can't give answer to why that happened, but just the inspiration to see that, because in the security field, a lot of things are secrecy. It's like kept secret. You don't talk too much about it. You're locking down everything and nothing is accessible, or, you know, the typical thing. But here is was actually cybersecurity in a practice doing the totally opposite, which you saw had this huge positive effect.
And it's very inspirational how that influenced you from technology side, but also the whole idea behind the community. And I think that made sure that you also started sharing and speaking on multiple events and communities, right?
Definitely. Amazing. It is, because you saw here that everyone was on board, whether you just have 1 year or not a year. This was when I was studying for my technology degree. I wasn't finished, but still you were invited to take part of it, to support in it. And then you get introduced to a lot of other people. Like then I was introduced to Microsoft, you know, incident response team that was going all in and supporting. And you also got introduced to the field in a totally different manner. And I think that is like the core also for the community. It doesn't matter how many years you've been in the field or not, but if you put yourself out there, you'll get the connection, you will get the support you would need. And also you get involved in a lot of exciting things moving, and also part of a broader community, which all together can mobilize in a impressive way.
So that's amazing, Sana. So based on your experience with this hack and your choice of technology, of course, can you also share with our listeners what are the primary areas of your expertise? Where are you focusing? Because you have made a huge switch from automotive to technology. So I think you had a more blanco free card to choose which technology you liked, where Franz and me maybe we are coming from a more old traditional way and we needed to work our ways up. Can you tell that to our speakers, listeners?
Yeah, so definitely things have been affected. Like, I started out with sales, which I really like the corporate side. But then I also was interested in the more technical engineering side of it. And that also, together with being exposed by this hack, and also to there get introduced to the dark team, the Microsoft specialist, kind of gave me this path that I was just curious about. I wanted to go even more deep, dive into it. And as we also see the trend, and also maybe from a more how to say, not commercial side, but where the need is, we see a lot of cybersecurity and how the digitalization has exposed a lot of companies for threats and totally also going to the cloud, a totally different cloud security posture. So, yeah.
So your main focus is currently on cloud security and SIEM, because you are really active on the Sentinel side of the project. Based on that, what projects or initiatives are you currently working on? Are there any particular challenges you are addressing through your community contributions or your involvement with Microsoft?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'm working mainly with Sentinel, which is setting up the SIEM solutioning for companies. And one of the challenges that's we've been faced with at the moment is due to the automation, the infrastructure as code deployment and utilization within the Sentinel ecosystem and portfolio, because what we do there is to onboard different data connectors. And one challenge we'd be faced with there, especially, is the XDR data connector, which actually seems to have requirement to use the user interface. And again, then it's giving us problems with rolling this out by infrastructure as code. So yeah, it seems like maybe Microsoft has some updates to do there, so we're able to use Bicep for this deployment. And here, after some investigation, and a big shout out to our fellow MVP Fabian, which have been done some testing. What he's been finding, at least for now, is that it seems like it can't be done due to that it's two different components which is not speaking to each other, and that's the cloud shell and the security API, that they're not allowed to speak to each other. It's a blocker from there and from the Microsoft side. So that's a tip to solve that problem. So
that's a good one. That's I think similar to Entra AID data connector. You need to have a user based authentication similar to that. But yeah. Something to look at. But I think a message to Microsoft would be, please take care of your data connectors.
Yeah, so here is more like the using application-based permission, and they get ASET token-based bearer token that they will not accept, because there's no trust between the two apps, that Microsoft do not have established a trust between those two. So the cloud and the security API would not talk, and the way to do it is by clicking through the interface. So yeah, that's a bummer when it comes to doing the infrastructure as code automation and deployment. So yeah, that's a challenge, but also that's like a local challenge, I would say, especially on the current project where I'm faced with now. But a more broader, like more global challenge, if I could say so, when working with Sentinel and the SIEM solutioning here, as this is a cloud-based one, and traditionally a lot of, at least big corporations have traditionally had like on-premises, they are running totally different infrastructure when it comes to logging and monitoring. What I see is also being a challenge is that if you choose to do the click-ups when it comes to Sentinel, it's easy done, it's quick done, it's click, and then you have a lot of things in place already. but what's not taking so much into consideration is when you're turning on all the data connection, onboarding all the logs, you start turning on all the alerts and it gets flooded with alerts and you don't have control of what's false positive, what's true positives, and it becomes overwhelming and the cost skyrocks and you don't take into consideration that even though it's built in analytical rules, you still would need to fine tune it for your environment because all environment would be differently. You will face different threats if you are working in health industry compared to aluminum production or in the financial sectors. So that's more like a global challenge I see working with this is that the product is easy to get up running and fast forward, but the consideration of utilizing all this, new way of working can sometimes be done too fast. And the importance of stepping back and do the fine tuning, that's something I see comes over and over and over again on various projects in various clients operating in different industry. And of course, it's great because people are eager to go up running, but yeah, it could be a blocker and also make the work even more complex that it's not necessarily to be, as long as you take into consideration having some patient, fine-tuning it, understanding it, and then go along with the next use case.
I think you're right. That I think we can agree about the load of data that are coming in and the discussions that we have regarding that kind of SIEM solutions that we had in the past. And nowadays we're using Sentinel, for example, who has a different approach, what you explained, Sanna. Talking about challenges, local challenges, global challenges, but also you're in a region, Norway, in the Nordics. Are there any specific regulations, for example, that have challenges regarding cybersecurity, regarding your work that you do?
I'm actually working on a Nordic level, so my client isn't Norwegian. But to take into consideration of in Norway, I would at least say from a European perspective, due to the fact that we have a lot of regulation when it comes to data and personal data and such. And when you're checking logging and especially working with SIEM solutioning, where the main goal is to do correlation between data and to do investigation and figure out which device, which user, where is the user located, and so on and so forth, this can be a challenge if you don't have control over the identity and access management, because you do, this information is critical and shouldn't be everyone to see and everyone to dig into. And when you operate within Azure, it could be a really complex identity and access management model that you're working from. So I would say that that consideration to understand that also you don't have control of the application logging. Sometimes application logging could be, in my worst case, I've seen actually credit card numbers being logged because it's been done a configuration on the application that for some other weird reason that's are ending up in logs. And then that's really like a red flag that needs to be raised and to handle in a really short matter of time. So here, be aware of the data that you're handling, and at least due to the regulation in EU, which Norway and all these countries are operating more or less in. So yeah, having an understanding of that is important and to be aware of which data you're handling, who have access to it, and so on.
I think indeed that data is becoming the identity was for the last couple of years very important, but now data is becoming more and more important, but also more specifically on the logging, but also on the way you build your application, right? The whole development cycle on your application.
Did we have a podcast series on that, Bojan?
I think something in the DevSecOps series. It just popped up. So, Sana, can you also, you have shared a couple of example projects that you've been working on with your customers. Different, they had different challenges as well. But one of the more recent security solutions or innovations that you have been implementing, what impact did it have exactly for your customer, but also maybe for you? What was your takeaway from that? Do you have an example for that specifically?
Yeah, so what I'm also been working a bit with is within Sentinel when it comes to encryption. So here with Sentinel, you can, because for the people that maybe are not too aware of it, it's different components under the hood here, but you are handling like log analytic workspaces, which you could look at as your database. And the way that kind of default are encrypting your data is by Microsoft Managed Key. And the solution that I've been working with here, taking more of component into perspective when with the security ecosystem of Microsoft, is utilizing the Azure Managed HSM to handling and providing keys, where you then end up with having a customer managed key encryption on the log analytics workspace that Sentinel is running upon. And the thing here with this solution, how it have been impacting me in a matter, is that you can see it in two ways. One is that you're adding more complexity to the solution, but the other part of it is that you also add another chain that you could also protect yourself against. Because let's say that there are a known weakness with Microsoft Managed Key, just let's say it, then that might affect all the solutioning that has this in use. So all, let's say, all kind of log analytic workspaces utilizing Microsoft Managed Key, and then it's a known vulnerability in it, then the potential is huge. But then you add this custom managed key encryption to it, then you're kind of blocked by that vulnerability. But of course, you're introducing a lot of new and more complexity, and also other vulnerability that you might add. So yeah. That's some Amazing. Different components in the security space that I've been working currently
Amazing.
On.
So maybe good to collaborate for our listeners. I think that's part of the data encryption in REST when it comes to Sentinel, right?
Yeah.
And for that, you need to have your send your own keys to Microsoft and have a dedicated cluster as well, I believe. Is that still Correct. The case?
Yes, that's the case. Yep.
So it's not a small customer that we can agree on as well, because we all know that's a custody solution as well.
But they have dropped the commitment here, though. That has to be mentioned.
Oh, really? So, yeah, there's no terabyte commit anymore.
No, now it's 1 to 100 megabyte. So that's so it's smaller clients able to have that solutioning at the moment. And I hope that they will lower it even more. I don't have any insight on that, but I hope so, because that would be a good move, at least from my perspective.
Amazing. Is that something new also for me then? Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're learning from each other. That's good. That's
yeah.
Good. Sana, what kind of, and I've been talking already about things that you have done, you have implemented, there's some challenges that you have. What trends do you foresee in the cybersecurity landscape for over the next few years, in your opinion? because we talked about already about the things that happens and you worked on. So what about next?
Yeah. So next, of course, the big thing next is the AI, in good and bad. But here, kind of, I would say, like, a shout out for the ones that want to dig more into the field. And one problem statement that at least I've been thinking about is the evidence manipulation. Because how to ensure that within the court or a lawsuit that judges, lawyers, also the clients here have the competencies to validate, is this a valid evidence or is it AI generated? Of course, now you are able to more or less pick out like what seems weird or not, but this becoming better and better and better. And I think it will be good to speed up the competencies when it comes to the evidence part. And this you could also apply to, you know, corporate data. How to ensure that the corporate data ingested or thrown out, if you, let's say, in a CM case, are doing automation by AI, how could you flag whether it has a good purpose or a bad purpose with the way it handles the data it's received, and then inject a result? I don't have a solution at it, but at least it's some problem statement putting out there how to validate.
Yeah,
that's a very interesting way of looking at it as well, indeed. So that the AI is manipulating its had the data that's returning. So
it's
I think it's going to be the same as with Wikipedia, right? For some people, Wikipedia is true as well. And
that's true. And,
but AI, it's true, right? It's fact. and for some, you're right. I think because it's at the end, I think they have trained the models with what they found on all kind of weird social medias that we have these days and what kind of people are screaming on the web. So if you take that in consideration, then you know what the output can be.
Yeah. Talking about AI, before you go into the next question, Puyan, talking about AI, I used, and that will be a recurring topic within this series. I used AI, Copilot, ChatGPT, name it whatever you want. I use it. I give it all your stuff, your stuff, your privacy, your information, Sana. So your name, the things you're working on. I get some background information from one website where you have presented a specific presentation on where they published your information. So I use that, and I asked AI what could be a short question to Sana using it. And this time it's a short question. So given your extensive experience in cloud technologies and cybersecurity and your current focus on Microsoft Sentinel, can you share a particularly challenging project you worked on and how you leveraged Microsoft Sentinel to enhance security outcomes? And I think it's a short question. Maybe you have an answer.
Yeah, well, short and short, but yeah, I'll give it a go. So what we see now, like how Sentinel are able to handle different things, will at least be when it comes to the token theft, that to flag that and also utilizing some of the AI to flag and give the transactors visibility to dig further into the potential of a token theft attack. So, yeah. Short and sweet.
That's a perfect answer.
And the UEBA integration with Sentinel Identity has helped with that, and probably also Defender for Identity integration could help also. So I think a broader a range of products integrating in Sentinel, which you already talked about, connectors and so on, that's making Sentinel real powerful to use a customer location, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. You have, and also it's not needed to be Microsoft products like Defender for Everything and all of these other components in the ecosystem, but also it does integrate, you know, with Palo Alto and all of those other security, but also non-security cloud providers or on-premises systems. And so,
yeah.
And just have to mention, it's 100 gigabyte per day when it comes to the commitment tiers. I'm not sure, but I might have said 100 megabyte, but just to correct it's that, gigabyte. It's 100 gigabyte a day. That's the commitment here for like 30 days that you're in there. But still, it's less than 500 gigabyte that it were before, and maybe 1 terabyte before that. I don't know.
I can remember it was a terabyte, but it's a while ago that I got the request from a customer to do that.
Yeah.
But and I know they implemented it, and after all, they achieved the terabyte. They are doing more than that a day. But yeah, it's good to see that they are decreasing, but they are doing that a lot, right? If we, I think, pause and take a look back also from our community perspective over the previous couple of years, how much Microsoft is transforming as well, listening to their community, to the MVPs, and adopting that into the pricing tier, technology tier, and all that levels. I think that's also a key of the collaboration. So we are also to do a little bit of short announcement. We are also having Pablo and Katie, of course, two beautiful, awesome people from the Microsoft team who will be also joining us in the last episode, because in our opinion, they are the bridge between the MVPs and the whole Microsoft product team, of course. But that's for a different study. To go back a little bit, Sana, because we are also going towards the end, I think, of this episode. You mentioned that the community had a huge impact on your personal situation, right? Where you started and how the steel company collaborated with the community. Can you also share from your own fields how you are interacting with the community and how your experience sharing that with the community is adding significant differences or maybe working with other security MVPs or in general the role of security MVPs in the community?
Yeah, so mainly I'm working on a conference coming up in 2025. It will be within the security space and Microsoft space, and I know Franz, you're doing the same conference, but for the Netherlands, we're doing it for Norway now in 2025. So that's really exciting. And then we also have this user group, the Microsoft Security User Group, running in Norway, but where we also do have it in a hybrid manner. So we also have people joining in from all over the world, but of course within the time zones that are good. And we meet up and have the security topics discussed there, as well doing some talks, whether it's podcast or also when it comes to be speaker at conference or meetups and so. So yeah, that's kind of what's in the loop. And also the focus here, as I'm within security and Microsoft and cloud, then Sentinel is of course close to my heart.
Oh, amazing.
And
so
as a last question in this nice recording, what is for you, you talked a bit about the community and what you're going to do in the next few months, year, probably. What is a personal or a professional goal for you in the coming period? What do you want to achieve?
Yeah, I would say continue just enjoying being part of the community and sharing my knowledge. Because enjoy to learn from others. Enjoy also to support where I can if people want to learn more about what I'm doing and we could collaborate together. So yeah, just continue actually with what I'm doing. That's enough. And it's really great.
Nice. Do you have any last words, Bojan, in this recording?
Well, I have a for the listeners that listen to the end, also to share them, because we also have to thank Sana for the existence of this show, right? Something we forgot to in the announcement, but the whole idea of this show was something that that Sana and Franz and me brought up when we were in a very long flight from Amsterdam to Seattle this year for the MVP Summit. So that's why Sana is here with us today as well, also as an MVP security, but also because she was part of the when the idea was come to the existence. So thank you, Sana, for your great feedback then to bring that show up, and thank you for being with us today and sharing your beautiful background, but also your expertise and how you are transforming that with the community now and your customers as well. So that would be my closing note, Franz.
And thank you, Sana, for being here and having the opportunity to have a recording with you and also the conversation that we had in the plane, as Fuyan explained. So it was nice to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. So we hope our listeners found today's discussion as informative and engaging as we did. I think it was. Remembering, cybersecurity is a continuously evolving field and staying informed is key to staying secure. So thank you for tuning in and we look forward to having you with us in our next episode. Until then, stay safe and stay secure.